Welcome, welcome, welcome. Another beautiful day in Kent, Ohio. Whoever you are, wherever you come from, whatever you believe, and whoever you love, you are welcome here with us together. And it's such a joy to see you all.
Flame of fire, spark of the universe that warmed our ancestral hearth, agent of life and death, symbol of truth and freedom. We strive to understand ourselves and our earthly home. As we gather here this morning, several of our UU principles and values seem particularly important now. Respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part, including social and environmental justice, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, and the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. As many of you may know, and Anya mentioned, there was a fantastic workshop here in the church. So right at home, we had wonderful things going on. And then in the larger world, over 200,000 people marched on behalf of the Earth in the People's Climate March in Washington, D.C. There were over 370 sister climate marches across the country and actually in many other places in the world. And there were at least four of us who drove down to Columbus in driving rain, but with very good heart for the march there. Now, looking back in history a little bit, our roots, one of our UU ancestors, Henry David Thoreau, had some relevant thoughts. The earth we tread on is not a dead, inert mass. It is a body, has a spirit, is organic and fluid to the influence of its spirit and to whatever particle of that spirit is in us. An earlier relative, Joseph Priestley, one of the founders of Unitarianism in England, is credited with the discovery, and this is huge actually, is credited with the discovery that oxygen is made by plants, thus replenishing the great cycle of life. Understanding the natural world, he believed, would promote human progress. So, our home, the Earth, is a teeming mosaic of life, of living greens and critters and creatures warmed by the sun, buffeted and kissed by the winds, watered by the rivers and lakes and rain and snow, all enveloped in the biosphere, that thin, breathing membrane that blankets the Earth and makes life possible. So whatever your image or understanding, Mother Earth, Green Sanctuary, Planet Earth, Gaia's Garden, this magnificent spinning blue-green ball is our home. Among the things we UUs and friends know, our lives are made whole again through our connections to Earth and each other. Come, let us worship and sing together.
In a shady glade, the chief of the jungle slept until... What are you doing? I was trying to sleep, Gecko. What do you want? It's the middle of the night.
I have a complaint.
What could a gecko lizard complain about? I mean, he spends all of his time lazing about, just eating and sleeping. Even when he was hungry, all he had to do was flick out his tongue and catch a mosquito. What's troubling you? The tiger asked.
It's the fireflies. All night long, they fly around, flashing their lights in my eyes, keeping me awake, flashing and flickering. I haven't slept for days. It's making me very grumpy. You're the chief of the jungle. Make them stop.
All right, said the tiger. Calm down, I'll talk to the fireflies. Okay. So Tiger sighed and went off to find the fireflies. Wading through the wet paddy fields, the night vibrated with the chirps and croaks of frogs and the trills of millions of insects. Above the paddies, the fireflies flickered and flashed. "Fireflies," Tiger called. "Gecko says you guys have been disturbing his sleep, flashing and flickering all night long. Is this true?"
"Well, we do flash our lights," they said. "But we don't do it to disturb anyone. We're just passing on Woodpecker's message. He heard it. We heard him drumming out a warning, so we just pass it on."
"Ah, I see," said Tiger. "So I guess I'll go talk to the Woodpecker then."
At the edge of the paddies, the Tiger found Woodpecker, drumming against a coconut palm. Rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat.
"Woodpecker," Tiger said, "fireflies say you've been rat-a-tat-tapping, tapping-tapping, rapping, and drumming all night. Is this true?"
"Well, of course it's true," Woodpecker said, and he puffed up his feathers. "I provide a great service. Clearly, my efforts are not appreciated." And he looked down his long beak at Tiger and Beetle. He looked down his long beak at Tiger and said, "Beetle rolls manure right across that path, and I warn the jungle animals so that no one steps in it. Without my drumming, who knows what mess you guys would be in?"
"Oh," said Tiger. "All right, well, that's very thankful, or helpful. Thank you, thank you."
And Tiger said, "Well, I guess I'll go talk to Beetle." It was easy to spot the beetle because his back gleamed like a polished metal.
"What's all this?" Tiger said. "Woodpecker says you're rolling a filthy mess all over this place."
"Yes, yes, yes, I am. I can't stop," said the beetle. He was rolling a ball of dung right up to the tiger's paw and said, "Water buffalo drops piles of it all over this path, and if I don't move it away, there's gonna be muck everywhere. Excuse me, I gotta keep working. I gotta keep working."
Tiger lifted his paw and Beetle bustled past.
All right," said the tiger. "Thank you, Beetle. I'll go see the buffalo."
Tiger found Buffalo in the pool of mud.
"Buffalo," Tiger roared. "Beetle says you've been leaving your manure all over the path. Is this true?"
"Oh, yes, sir. I leave my manure all over this path, sir. But you see, I'm helpful. All right, sir? The rain washes holes into this path every afternoon, and I leave manure only to fill up the holes so nobody trips and falls."
"I see. Well, that's very thoughtful of you, Buffalo," said the tiger. "I guess I'll have to go see what rain has to say."
And Tiger set off to the mount. His tail twitched, and because he was beginning to lose his patience. And he climbed and climbed and climbed and climbed. And he climbed through the jungle, the woodland, and the scrub, and then he climbed some more. At last, his claws clattered onto the smooth grass of the mountain peak, and he stopped to catch his breath. He looked down the mountain. The sun was shining. It was beautiful. Jungle spread out for miles around, flowers all flamboyant and gorgeous. Wild orchids, climbing lilies, trumpets of violet blue. Tiger sniffed. He smelled jasmine and frangipani. He swiveled his ears and he heard newborn streams trickling and tinkling. And below the jungle, on the green gold steps of the paddy fields, he could even see the faint light of the fireflies. No need to ask why rain rains anymore. So he cooled his paws in the stream and watched for a while, and he watched the water journey from the mountain to the sea, sustaining every living thing along its way, even the tiniest mosquito. And Tiger plunged his muzzle into the clear, fresh water, had a drink, and proceeded down the mountain. It was dusk by the time the tiger found the lizard again.
"Well, did you talk to the fireflies? They're still flashing and flickering on and on. Did you tell him to stop?"
"Gecko," said the tiger. He sat down on his haunches and he spoke very slowly. "Listen carefully. The fireflies flash to pass on the woodpecker's warning. The woodpecker warns everyone not to step in the beetle dung. The beetle clears the excess dung left by the buffalo, and the buffalo leaves manure on the path to fill up the holes made by the rain. And the rain makes holes in the path, which creates lakes and streams and puddles where mosquitoes live."
"Oh."
"Gecko, what do you eat?"
Mosquitoes.
So. Yes?
If the rain stopped raining.
Yes?
Buffalo could stop filling holes.
Uh-huh.
Beetle could stop rolling dung.
Right.
And woodpecker could stop drumming.
Mm-hmm.
And the fireflies could stop flashing.
And gecko.
But I'd have nothing to eat.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, said the tiger. So, Gecko, go live in peace with the fireflies, all right? So, Gecko stuck himself upside down in a tree underneath the branch and closed his eyes and went to sleep. And the fireflies flickered and flashed, and the tiger finally got to go back to bed. As we sing our children to their classrooms, let's remember the wisdom of the tiger, that we are all connected and must live in peace with each other and with the earth.
I pray that we say yes into the silence of our lives. Say yes. When it is noisy in life, say yes. In this world where our feelings prove our humanity, say yes to joy and say yes to sorrow. In a world where so many suffer, say yes to caring enough to feel the hurt and struggle with others. In a world where cowards kill from a distance or block the paths to safety for others, say yes to courage and honor, the truer way of being human. In a life made up of all that has come before, say yes to your heritage, whether you like it or not. And remembering that sometimes we are the ones in need, say yes now to others who are in need. In this world of plenty for us, say yes to giving, to generosity, to the hand that reaches out in need. But when you do not have enough, say yes to your own courage to reach out. In a world full of rules and dogma and limitations, say yes to each other and say yes to yourself. Say yes to beauty wherever it is found, the beauty of sunlight, the beauty of muggy gray skies, and always, always say yes to love. Amen.
The full title of our reading today is What Was Once the Largest Shopping Center in Northern Ohio Was Built Where There Had Been a Pond I Used to Visit Every Summer Afternoon by Mary Oliver. Loving the earth, seeing what has been done to it, I grow sharp. I grow cold. Where will the trilliums go? And the colt's foot? Where will the pond lilies go to continue living their simple, penniless, lifting their faces of gold? Impossible to believe we need so much as the world wants us to buy. I have more clothes, lamps, dishes, paper clips than I could possibly use before I die. Oh, I would like to live in an empty house with vines for walls and a carpet of grass. No planks, no plastic, no fiberglass. And I suppose sometime I will. Old and cold, I will lie apart from all this buying and selling with only the beautiful earth in my heart.
Sometimes 1963 is referred to as the year that everything happened. I don't know if that's true, but when I think of that, and maybe you also think of the assassination of John Kennedy, that may come to mind, or Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech, 1963. Maybe you think of the beginning of Beatlemania, or the early mumblings of Bob Dylan. And see how that worked out. Nobel laureate. civil rights activists were both visible and being murdered at an astonishing rate. Medgar Evers was killed in Mississippi. Maybe you remember the scene in Kelly Ingram Park in Birmingham, Alabama, with police dogs and fire hoses attacking young protesters. Or enormous civil rights rallies and marches. Or maybe you just remember that LSD was legal and some kind of intriguing, promising drug. A few other significant things happened in 1963 that are specifically relevant today. For one thing, the annual growth rate on planet Earth peaked at its fastest ever of 2.2%, almost 2.2% per year. That's the year also that Senator Gaylord Nelson spoke to President Kennedy about the crucial need to make the public aware of the state of the environment and the need to change some of our ways of being in relationship to our planet. That idea eventually became Earth Day, which occurred for the 47th time just over a week ago. 1963. A six-year-old me saw a very big tree. We'll get back to that. I couldn't separate these events as I prepared for today because everything merges into one. Even yesterday, there were more marches and protests around the country about our environment. In the United States, we've been marching and protesting in the interest of equality and civil rights for decades now. Right here, we had the workshop I mentioned, yet threats to environmental and civil rights continue in real and significant measure. The 1960s contained beginnings of ecological justice and civil justice and equality and peace and freedom and expansion of our minds, but neither the 1960s nor the rest of the 20th century contained solutions. And we humans do a pretty good job of making a lot of noise about enormous challenges. Sometimes I think we've successfully named solutions, but we can't stop talking, we just keep going. We name something and we keep going. But sometimes we become better people in the process of caring and thinking and reflecting and joining together for enormous challenges. That part, the part about becoming better people, the best people we can be, that's why we're here. That's why people go to church in places like this. Now, I may never be finished discovering ways to become more kind and wise and loving, and that's what we try to do in church. Then, when we step out into the world, we are better equipped to face the challenges before us. I don't know if 1963 was the year that everything happened, but I was aware of almost everything I named as my six-year-old self. And I remember my first trip to California to visit my grandmother, and that trip contained terrors and joys and mysteries and my first memorable holy experience, which happened in a redwood forest. Among the trees, I recall the play of light and shade, the dancing, speckling sunlight, the smell of the moist soil, the texture of the thick, thick bark as I tried to hug one of the huge trees, which I would have had to go around many times as a six-year-old self. I recall the reach of tree into sky that sent me spinning as I looked up, a natural placement of trees that invited a sense of the holy that I found poorly imitated when I later visited a cathedral built by human hands. Standing among those trees, looking up, I saw the sky and my connection to it in a way that had never happened before. The rotation of the planet seemed obvious. Our movement through space appeared meaningful. Who could ask for more from a holy experience? Now, I don't know if I understood the motion of planets at that age, but if you had told me on that day that our Earth was flat or that we were just standing still, I would have known you were wrong. And on that day, there were slightly more than 3 billion people alive on planet Earth. And as I noted, the population was increasing at the greatest percentage rate ever measured. In our planet's relentless zipping through space, we have traveled nearly 32 billion miles since then. That's just us going around the sun, 32 billion miles so far since 1963. We're the third rock from the sun. The math is pretty easy. And we're not just going around and round on the axis of the planet. We're spinning a lot, too, which is why you get dizzy sometimes. I read that somewhere. We've spun about 473 million miles since 1963, so that's a lot of spinning and a lot of zipping. And bigger parts are moving, too. The whole solar system isn't just sitting there with us moving around inside it. It's moving, and our galaxy is moving. And what's amazing to me is that anyone can expect things to stay the same with so much motion, and we never stop. In some remarkable ways, though, we have changed a lot in our planet since then, even in a general way. Remember what cars smelled like when they were basically dumping about 8% of unburned hydrocarbons right out the tailpipe? And you'd sit at a stoplight or a stop sign and you'd just be inhaling that gas along with all the other delicious fumes that came from cars. Not so much anymore. How about things the way they used to be packaged? And now they're cleverly flat packed in recyclable containers. Not always, but it's a lot different. The prevalence of recycling in so many locations around the United States, it's phenomenal. The general efficiency of almost everything, the power we carry in our pockets on the cell phone that will hold battery charge for days when such power was inconceivable in 1963. We are doing so much more with so much less that our planet is now holding more than twice as many people as it was back then. And we're not worse off. I think about that often, all the people. I think of that when traffic is slow or airports are crowded or every single seat on the plane is full of somebody who's irritated. And I think about that in public places when somebody apologizes for just wanting to reach a shelf in front of me or just pass between me and whatever I'm looking at. But I must have been in really good form on a day some years ago when something like this occurred. I was probably looking at books on a bookshelf in a bookstore because I'm a booky kind of person. And I find it easiest to scan from a distance. I can't just get up close and see what I want to see. So I would have been standing across the aisle scanning, and someone had to walk past me. And they apologized. "Excuse me, I'm sorry." And in that moment, I thought that was absurd. Why should they have to apologize? And I said, "You're fine. Everyone gets to be somewhere." And I've reflected ever since, maybe 15 years. I know not everyone agrees. I know not everyone agrees that everyone gets to be somewhere. Based on criteria I can't understand, some people conclude that not everyone gets to be in their field of vision. Not everyone gets to have a share of the space on our planet Earth. That one should stay in a closet. That one should stay in their own country. That one should not come through this door. I don't understand that, but I observe it. Population and resources feel like a personal issue sometimes. It's not personal, but it feels like it. So ever since I heard myself say that, I've been saying it a lot, and I've been asking myself how much I believe it to be true. With one other person walking between me and the books on the shelf, it's pretty easy to just let that be. That's fine. They're a book person. They should be in a book space with other book people. With a couple hundred people on an airplane, it's a little tougher, but we are literally all in the same boat. We're going the same place. And we ought to just sit down and fly, because that's astonishing. Can you imagine what we're doing? Hurtling above this planet, 6 or 7 miles above the planet, at 200 or 300 people, going at 600 or 700 miles an hour. Isn't that amazing? And wouldn't it be stupid if there were 4 people on the plane? Wouldn't it be? So that's the least attended commercial flight I was ever on was 4 people. And I thought it was crazy, but kind of cool. It was a long time ago. That would not happen now. It would not happen. That's efficiency. It's got to be okay. Long after my first visit to the Redwoods, I lived near that same forest for a few years while I was going to grad school. I went back to that sacred space I had remembered for so long. I set out for the woods, certain that I could find that tree, and I did. I found the path well marked. In fact, there were many paths, all connecting a series of parking lots that all led to a concession hut and an endless flow of tourists. Guides were herding them around. It was noisy, it was busy, and there was a fence between me and the tree I had tried to hug so many years before. But I tried to see the value in all this. After all, I was in seminary, and you get to question everything. Don't make assumptions. Many people now, clearly from what I witnessed, from all over the world, were able to come see the holy trees that I had carried in my heart for nearly my entire life. The paved pathways make it possible for anyone with any kind of mobility to visit the spot. I tried to think of the fences as simply protecting the trees from these crowds, not keeping me away. I really tried to feel okay about the whole arrangement, but that was a moment when it felt personal, and I wasn't having a lot of success. Beyond my reach, because of the fence, there were candy wrappers stuck in the underbrush. I was offended. Families were fighting on the trail about which way to go, and the overwhelming majority of people I looked at were watching the path, just watching the ground, or watching their guide instead of looking at the majesty around them. It was clear that for some, this was just another spot along their list, another bumper sticker to collect so they could say they'd been there. But had they been there? Had they? On that day, I left quickly and went on to find solitude elsewhere on the coast of California, where I spent the day, trying to let go of the resentment and confusion I was feeling about my own resentment. My holy ground had become a circus or a zoo, and I wasn't sure whether it was the trees or me who was caged. And the thought of those paths haunted me. Now, I need to be able to apply the notion that everyone gets to be somewhere to more than 4 billion people who weren't here in 1963 but are now. Here we are, sharing the spaceship Earth. 4 billion is both abstract and intimidating. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what 4 billion people would look like. At some point, 4 billion will be half the population of the planet. But you need to know that our population is no longer growing at 2.2%. It's half that, 1.1. We are doing more with less. We are making room for more. And we're evolving in such a way that we're not creating people as fast as we used to. Humans have, at least for the last couple hundred years, consistently underestimated how adaptable the world is and how adaptable humans are. Despite our inability to imagine, good things happen. We do learn how to share and play nice, and we do find ways to feed and house more people. We don't have it right yet. We've never had it right. But all that motion, it's in the right direction. We make progress. We share. And it's true, we are a significant burden on our planet. And if one has to go, it's going to be us. Don't worry about the planet. She's stronger than 8 billion of us and would gladly have us move on and recover just fine. on a big enough space of time. From the poetry of George Feuerstein, scholar and author, he wrote Wounded Mother Earth. Mother, nursing on your broad body, I have grown strong in limb and thought. Never have I lacked the necessities of life. And I have even taken more than needed, and sometimes more than what was good for me. Mother, not once did you hesitate to succor me. Not once did your generosity falter. However far afield I wander, every molecule of air exudes your kindness. Every droplet of water is a tear of love. Every ounce of soil, your fond offering. Mother, forgive your child all his foolish excesses and reckless exploitations. Over and over I have plundered and wounded you like a nocturnal thief, thinking you would not notice or mind, or not thinking anything at all. Mother, you lie before me bleeding, and I am the callous cause of your plight. Unable to hide my guilt or shame, I stand trembling at your righteous wrath, which is as certain as your love. Mother Earth has love and wrath to offer. Rebecca Parker, the retired president of my alma mater, challenges us not to doubt beauty's power to restore human beings to their senses. And what better time than today to begin or to renew a spiritual practice of noticing, of praising, of enhancing and saving the beauty of our home, this lovely blue-green planet Earth. Rebecca says she struggled for years to resolve the relationship between the lure of beauty and the outrage of injustice. She says, I thought they pulled in opposite directions, beauty, a temptation, justice, an obligation. Now I know they go together. We can save the earth by savoring it. It is not either or, it is both and. If we do not fill our souls with the beauty of the full moon rising golden and ripe over the hills, or the new crescent moon gently cradling Venus in a fiery sunset over the Golden Gate, or nourish ourselves with music and poetry and dance, every day we will lose sight of what we are trying to save. If we forget to notice the tiny flowers as well as the arrogant ones, or forget the many beautiful places, creatures, and aromas that make this world what it is, we will lose our ability to keep moving and living passionately toward a more whole, beautiful, and peaceful earth. How we each decide to embrace the task of healing this earth will take different forms, but our presence in this struggle for survival is essential. It is our survival as well. There's no one else but us to celebrate the inherent worth and beauty of our planet, born so long ago, hanging out here in a giant galaxy. While others may pray for the rapture and fiery end of the earth, let us pray for the healing and beautification of the world. Now, as I was leaving the forest after my last visit to the Redwoods, just before leaving the coast the last time, I saw an elderly couple standing far from the screaming families. They didn't need a guide. He was leaning against that sturdy fence and separating us from us and the trees, but holding him up. And she was holding his other arm to keep him from falling. And tears were coming from his eyes. And I realized that it was someone else's turn in that particular holy place. We belong here, and we belong to this earth. My colleague Lowell Brook took liberties with the 23rd Psalm, and it came out like this. The earth is my home, I shall not want. The earth has green pastures for me to lie down in, and still waters to show me and soothe me. The earth restores my soul. Even though I am hurting, I am comforted by the hills and trees. Always, always, The earth is present in live oaks and calla lilies, in redwoods and redtails, in birdsong and bay breeze, in rivers and rain, in misty fog and clear light, in sunrise and starshine. In everything there is infinite beauty, there is order and variety, simplicity and abundance, and I only have to look. Even in my deepest pain, the earth holds me, ceaselessly surrounds me, feeds my body and my spirit, and I only have to receive it. I am blessed by the earth. Surely, goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will live in the house of love forever. Surely. Surely. Be at peace. The whole world has a hold of you. You belong to it. That we may live fully and abundantly, I say amen.
The way that all the water becomes the water, moving right through me. The river runs and connects me to the sea. The raindrop falls down into the stream. The stream flows into the ocean. These currents are a part of me and echo in my motion. We spend our lives drifting down the river, her liquid arms keeping us afloat. We walk the paths of those who came before us. Into this path our currents we devote. We move together, we ride this river, we become the water and go on forever. The river sometimes stops within a stillness of emotion, but when within the river breaks, we're right back to the ocean. The water rushing over me becomes the rain tomorrow. It falls upon the broken ground and heals all earthly sorrow. We spend our lives drifting down the river, her liquid arms keeping us afloat. We walk the paths of those who came before us. Into this path our currents we devote. We move together, we ride this river. We become the water and go on forever.
Why don't you free your hands from holding those books and find humans to hold instead. Thank you, Hal. We are travelers on this planet, and our planet is traveling, and our solar system is traveling, and our galaxy is traveling in this amazing, amazing life we live. Our part is tiny, but it matters. Reach out to each other as often as you can to feel the pulse of another human, a fellow traveler on this life, on this speck of dirt in the universe. Reach out when you are in need, and reach out when someone is in need of you. Have a care about how you pollute, how you consume, and realize that the earth will have her way with us if we don't take care of her. Keep that in perspective. We come to church for perspective, and I offer the perspective that There may be 8 billion of us someday, but we're outnumbered by the power of Mother Earth. So don't mess around with her. Don't neglect her. And show a little gratitude every day. Life will be better for all of us. The Earth will be happier for the future. Go in peace. Return in love. Amen.